Turn to Proverbs 6:27. This evening I plan to set a record maybe and cover 5 verses. So, yeah. Breakneck speed. Proverbs 6:27 says, "Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned?" So let's look at the first phrase there. Can a man take fire in his bosom? And if you turn with me to Genesis 16 and verse 5, we see here that when a woman is sexually intimate with a man, it is said that she is given into his bosom. So I think there's sort of a double meaning here. Can a man take fire in his bosom? There's an immediate context of, like, if you literally had like a piece of burning wood thrown into your chest, you know, you're going to get burned, obviously. But then it seems like there's also somewhat of a connotation here to adultery, which is obviously what Solomon is going to compare this with as he moves on through the chapter. Genesis 16 and verse 5, this is when Abraham and Sarah were promised a son, but it hadn't come yet, and Sarah decides that she'll take matters into her own hand and give Abraham her maid, or her servant, so that Abraham could have a son through her. And Sarai said unto Abram, "My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom." And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. So giving her into his bosom was the way that Abraham knew her and that she conceived. So there is obviously that connotation there. So can a man take fire in his bosom and not be burned? Well, the answer is no. And then interestingly enough, adultery is also described as a fire. So it would be, if you take a woman into your bosom that's not your wife, you are taking fire into your bosom. Job 31 and verse 12. We've been over this verse a number of times. Job says, referring to adultery, "For it is a fire that consumeth to destruction and would root out all mine increase." So therefore, when a man commits adultery with a whore, he is taking fire into his bosom. And therefore, you could say, if you commit adultery, you are playing with fire. And that's a pretty apt description of it. And then the second half there, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? So this is what you call a rhetorical question, where the answer is obvious in the question. The answer is no, right? You can't take fire in your bosom without your clothes being burned. And if you play with fire, you will get burned. And it is the fool who thinks that he can get away with sin without the consequences of it catching up with him. And he will be sorely mistaken. If you look in Galatians chapter 6, there are people out there that think that they can play with fire and not get burned, right? In any number of contexts, whether it's adultery or whether it's high-stakes gambling or whether it's drug use, right? There's all kinds of things where people think, drinking and driving, oh, I can do it. I can drive better when I'm drunk. You know, you've probably heard stupid people say that. And they're playing with fire, right? You will get burned eventually when you do that kind of thing. Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8. It says, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap everlasting life." God's not mocked. You will get back what you've put in, and if you sow sin, you will reap punishment. Sometimes you get away with it for a while, and sometimes the Lord allows that, you know, just to either to give you a space to repent or just to make the judgment all that much worse if you just continue in it. But eventually it's going to come back. And interestingly enough, whenever God repays sin, it is said to be recompensed into a man's bosom, which I think is interesting. Jeremiah 32, verse 18. Jeremiah 32 and verse 18. That would be a good place to dish out punishment. Your bosom is your chest. If an attacker's running at you and you're going to shoot, where you aim? Center mass, right? You return his iniquity into his bosom, right? The Lord does the same thing. Jeremiah 32 and verse 18. It says, "Thou showest loving kindness unto thousands and recompensest the iniquity of the fathers into the bosom of their children after them. The great, the mighty God, the Lord of hosts, is his name. I just wanted that recompensing iniquity into the bosom. So you take fire into your bosom, you'll get burned. And the burning can be two different types of burning. If you're a child of God, you'll be burned temporally. If you're not a child of God, you're going to be burned eternally. And I'll give you both of these. The first one is in John chapter 15, 2 and 6. John 15, 2 and 6. When I did the Two Everything series of several years ago, we looked at two damnations and two perishings and two...
Two everythings, yes.
And there's two burnings. I didn't really... That was probably like along with damnation or something. I'm sure I covered that. But yeah, you can be burned in two different senses. And don't we still use that terminology today? I got burned, right? I got burned doing that, right? Like I suffered because of something that I did. John 15 and verse 2, Jesus said, "Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away, and every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit." So the branches that Jesus is referring to are in him. So these are referring to children of God as he goes through this. He's the vine, we're the branches. And if you ever wonder why it seems like the Lord is chopping at you and you're suffering, it's because he's purging you that you might bring forth more fruit. If you want the branch, if you want the vine to bring forth more fruit, you have to cut off pieces of it. That's what a vine dresser does. You'd think that you just let it grow so you'd have more grapes, but you actually, if you want to get more grapes, you trim off some of the buds, and then that allows the other ones to grow more abundantly. But pruning is a painful process, but it's done for our good. So when God takes things away from us and doesn't allow opportunities to happen to us or let you suffer with an illness or something, a job loss or whatever, it could be anything, right? Those things are purging. He's nipping off the things that are holding you back. Painful but necessary.
And that's true with any fruit in your garden.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Strawberries, if you let it grow all to vine, you mm-hmm. don't get much fruit.
Yep. Yep, that's right. It's just like with child training. You know, if you just let him grow up on his own, you're not going to get very good fruit. But if you prune him back, right, then he's going to grow up well. And then look over in verse 6. He says, "If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned." Now, most people would probably take this verse to say, well, this person just lost their eternal salvation and now they're being cast into hell because they haven't continued faithful. But you have to remember verse 2, every branch in me, right? So these branches that are not bearing fruit and that are cast off and withering and then are burned, they are branches in Christ. And if a man is in Christ, he can never lose his eternal salvation. So this is a temporal burning. This is like the guy that sins and is unrepentant and he gets thrown out of the church. And then he just withers off the vine, and he's, as it were, just gathered and thrown to be burned because he's worthless. He's of no value to the kingdom of God, but he's not lost eternally. Now, if you're not a child of God and you play around with adultery, then you're going to be burned eternally. Revelation 21:8. "But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." Now the thing is, we only know whether we're a child of God by our fruits, right? And we can look at other people's fruits and judge as best we can. We can never really know for certain about somebody else because sometimes, you know, the sheep look like the goats and the goats look like the sheep. But if you want to have assurance that you're one of God's elect, well, then you don't do things like committing adultery. You don't commit adultery and say, well, I'm one of the elect. I'm just going to be burned temporally. Well, you don't know that, right? And if you have that attitude, then, you know, chances are you might not be one of the elect, because one of the elect wouldn't do that with that attitude, just thinking that, oh, well, you know, Jesus died for me, therefore I can do whatever I want. Paul says people that talk like that, their damnation is just when they say, let us do evil that good may come. So that takes care of verse 27, and then we'll move on into verse 28. Proverbs 6 and verse 28 says, can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? So this is, he's continuing the same line of argumentation here using rhetorical questions. He asked in the previous verse, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Now he asks, can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? Second type of question like this, the same, the answer is the same. No, you can't go upon hot coals and your feet not be burned, unless you're some Satan-worshipping pagan or something where they can, some of those guys actually do walk on hot coals and they don't even feel it. But I'd say that they're doing so under the inspiration or some power of Satan or something like that. But normally speaking, if you're not a devil worshiper, yeah, you're going to get burned if you walk on coals. Now, the thing about burns is that they're painful for a long time after the initial burn, right? If you get a paper cut, it hurts a little bit, but then it goes away pretty quickly. There's, you know, lots of other injuries. If you stub your toe, unless you do it really badly, it hurts for a little bit, but then the pain goes away after a few minutes, right? But if you get a burn, it hurts for a long time. It lasts for a long time. And I think that's why Solomon is using these burns as an analogy here. Because when you commit adultery, it's going to be a long-lasting thing. And if you think burns are painful and that lasts a long time, imagine burning the soles of your feet in anything you go to do. Anytime you walk, you're walking on burnt feet. How does it feel like to walk on a bum foot, Wayne? Hurts, right? I mean, everything you do, right? You can never forget about it because it's always there. Well, that's what it's like whenever you get your feet burned. Now, it's interesting that the Christian life is referred to as a walk, right? Let me just give you a couple of verses. Colossians 2 and verse 7. Colossians 2 and verse 7. Paul says, as ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye in him. And then in Colossians 4:5, just over a page, he says, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. And we could multiply many verses. There's lots of verses in the Bible that refer to the Christian life as a walk. It's also referred to as a run. But I'm just focusing on the walking part for now. So the man who commits adultery will greatly hinder his Christian walk, as the remaining verses of this chapter in Proverbs chapter 6 show us. If you go there, Proverbs 6, 29 through 35, just give you a little preview of where we'll be heading some tonight and then probably in the next week or two. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 29. So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her shall not be innocent. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. For jealousy is the rage of a man. Therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. So it's going to be a hindrance of the man's walk, obviously, as we saw there. And it's going to leave scars and sores on the feet, which are going to make him limp for the rest of his life. If you burned your feet really badly, chances are you're probably going to walk with a limp. And if you commit adultery with a woman, you're going to walk with a limp for the rest of your life. You're going to have that hanging on to you. That's why this is so crucial. That's why Solomon spends so much time on it. That takes care of verse 28. Proverbs 6:29. So we just got done giving us the two rhetorical questions. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? And then verse 29 is connected to that. So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her, shall not be innocent. Let's look at that first phrase there. So he that goeth in to his neighbor's wife. Now, it starts off with that little word, so. But that little word's important because it links it back to the previous verses. So, when it is placed at the beginning of a clause with a continuative force, so it is continuing the thought, in other words, when it's right first in the clause like it is here, it means used to confirm or strengthen a previous statement, denoting similarity or parallelism in some respect between two facts, actions, etc. So in the same way that you can't take fire in your bosom without being burned, and you can't walk on hot coals without being burned, in the same exact way, a continuation of thought, if you go into your neighbor's wife and you touch her, you won't be innocent. You're going to get burned, in other words. So it's drawing this comparison between the previous things that he just said. And then he says, whosoever toucheth her shall not be innocent. So just as the man who takes fire in his bosom will have his clothes burned, and the man who walks on hot coals will burn his feet, so the man who touches his neighbor's wife shall not be innocent. He will get burned just like the others. It's going to be a, you know, metaphorical burning, but he's going to get burned nevertheless. And I won't go over these verses again because I just did, but if he's a child of God, he's going to get burned temporally. John 15, 2 and 6, when he's cast forth as a branch, men gather them to be burned. And if he's not a child of God, he's going to be burned eternally because whoremongers have their place in the lake of fire, we're told in Revelation 21 and verse 8. And then Solomon goes on to explain how the man is not going to be innocent. In verse 33, he says that he'll get a wound and dishonor. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. So just like walking on hot coals is going to leave a wound, so is the man that commits adultery. A wound and dishonor. And the one who commits adultery should expect to go to hell. And this is just a good rule of thumb. Just keep this in the back of your mind. If that temptation ever crosses your mind, just think, if I do this, I'm going to hell. Because if you do this, you're showing forth the evidence that you're a reprobate. It's not a guarantee that you're going to hell, but if in your mind you think, if I do this, I'm going to hell, it's a good deterrent, right? Even if you're not sure. Proverbs 7 and verse 27, her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. So the person that goes into the chambers of the strange woman, just imagine that you walked up to the big hole in the earth that the Lord clave whenever he took, what's his name, that tried to take the priesthood from Moses, Korah, cracked the earth open and they went straight down into the pit. Just imagine that the door to the strange woman's house is cracked earth right down to the center of the earth, right down into the pit. I remember talking to somebody years ago that had very depressed and actually had suicidal thoughts. And this person told themselves that if I do this, I'm going to hell. And even though, you know, there's no guarantee of that, but it was a good deterrent for the person. And, you know, sometimes I guess it's not such a bad idea to tell yourself something that maybe is a little bit more stringent than what might actually happen, but it's a good way to keep yourself from things like that. And then it says there in verse 29, we don't want to miss this little word. So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her shall not be innocent. So whosoever does this will meet with severe judgment from God. Whosoever means whoever, and whoever is as a compound relative or with correlation in principal clause, which usually follows but occasionally precedes in generalized and indefinite sense, it means whatever person or persons, anyone who or any who. So people say any who today, like instead of anyhow, you know, that, but that's not what this is saying. It's two different words, any who, like anyone who does this, any person. Nobody's left out here. Any person that goes into his neighbor's wife is going to meet with severe judgment from God. Whatever person, no matter who they are, will not be innocent if he goes into a strange woman. Anyone who does so will be under God's judgment, whether he is old or young, whether he's rich or poor, whether he's elect or reprobate, whether he's of good reputation or ill repute, whether he's a preacher or a pew warmer, whether he's a CEO or a secretary, whether he's a president or a peon, it doesn't matter. Anybody of any station in life, anywhere that does this, will not be innocent. They will suffer the judgment of God. It's pretty serious business, isn't it? That takes care of verse 29. Turn to Proverbs 6:30. We're moving right along here. It says, men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. So we're switching gears here a bit. I mean, this is still pertinent. Solomon is using this as an example of the adulterer, but we're just going to take a little break from that and just talk about what this verse is specifically saying. So men will have compassion on a thief if he steals to feed himself, assuming that at least three things are true, and these are three things that I could think of anyway. If he has no other means to acquire food, right? If a thief is in desperate straits and he's very hungry, but his parents live down the road, but he goes and breaks into his neighbor's house for food, and he could have gone to his parents' house, obviously men are still going to despise the thief, right? So there are some stipulations here. Or if he is not stealing with a wicked intent to harm his neighbor. So if he's starving and he's got several neighbors, he's like, well, I really hate that neighbor. I'm going to break through his window to get food from him to feed myself. Well, then you're probably going to despise a guy because he had some ill intent there. Or he is not stealing to enrich himself due to covetousness. So maybe he is hungry and he breaks into the house, but he also, you know, takes your guns and your jewelry and everything else while he's at it, right? He's stealing to feed his soul when he's hungry, but he got a little bit more than just some bread and butter, right? So assuming those things are not true, then men are not generally going to despise a guy if he's actually stealing to feed himself, right? He's still going to get in trouble, as the verse and as Solomon will go on to say later, but men are going to have compassion on that kind of thing. When a man's hungry, he will sometimes do criminal things out of desperation, and in such cases, men will not despise him. And I think we could all understand that. You know, you could feel bad for a guy that maybe even if he did break into your house because he was just that desperate and that hungry. But, you know, I wish he would just ask me because I just give him food, right? You don't got to break in. But anyway, Matthew Henry said, as for the sin of stealing, if a man were brought to it by extreme necessity, if he stole meat for the satisfying of his soul when he was hungry, though that will not excuse him from guilt, yet it is such an extenuation of his crime that men do not despise him, do not expose him to ignominy, but pity him. Hunger will break through stone walls, and blame will be laid upon those that brought him to poverty or that did not relieve him. And I think there's some truth to that, especially today. Today, if anybody commits any kind of crime, you feel bad for him. Everybody feels bad for him, and it was his parents' fault, or if it was society's fault, or it was his teacher's fault. It was somebody's fault. It wasn't anybody's fault but his own. But especially the guy that's legitimately hungry enough to break through and steal, men probably would get more upset at the people that caused his poverty than the man himself. So Solomon here is using a thief in contrast to an adulterer. Because in verse 32, which we'll get to next week, Lord willing, he says, but whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding, he that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. So comparing a thief to an adulterer. And this kind of makes a powerful case here. Whereas men do not despise a thief who steals out of desperation, they will wound, dishonor, and reproach an adulterer. Verse 33, a wound of dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. Men are not going to have compassion on the adulterer. You can't say, well, you know, I was just really deprived of my sexual needs and I had no choice but to go into my neighbor's wife. And nobody's going to buy that, right? It's different if I haven't worked for a month, I have no food, I'm starving to death. You're going to have compassion on that, but not on the other one. Nobody's going to buy that. This shows that adultery is a greater crime than theft, especially when theft was a result of destitution. And I think everybody would probably agree that adultery is worse than theft. And it's interesting that the Ten Commandments point to this because adultery comes before thievery in Exodus 20:14 through 15. And there's probably a good reason for that. I think it would make sense that the Lord would list the sins in order of degree. Killing comes before adultery, right? Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal. But it's interesting, today, thieves are punished with jail time, while adulterers are not punished at all, nor even dishonored or reproached in many cases, which shows how far our society has fallen from biblical morality. You think about it, in the Bible, adulterers were stoned, the man and the woman. Today, adulterers are, I mean, there's not even hardly a stigma to it anymore. I mean, how many people walk around shamefaced because they committed adultery? You know, how many people are shunned in society because of that? None. You certainly don't get in any kind of trouble in the courts. I think even, and maybe it varies state to state, but if you are the victim of adultery and you divorce your spouse, I don't even think you get any special treatment. It's not like this all, you know, 100% of the spouse's income now goes to you if you were the victim of adultery. I mean, it's just like any other, just like two people that can't get along, just split everything 50-50. It doesn't matter if the guy or the woman was unfaithful. There's virtually no punishment for adultery whatsoever. But you steal something, and you're going to jail. And if you steal something from the government, you're going to jail for a long time. Like, you don't pay all your taxes or something, or you don't pay that unpaid parking ticket, you're going to be in big trouble. But, you know, you commit what the Bible calls a heinous crime of adultery. Yeah, nobody worries about that. I mean, heck, presidents in the United States have done it, you know, many of them. Nobody cares. It just kind of shows you where we're at. That takes care of verse 30. Okay, Proverbs 6 and verse 31. This will be the last verse for tonight. But if he be found, speaking of the thief that stole to satisfy his soul when he was hungry, but if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold, he shall give all the substance of his house. This is kind of interesting. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. So whereas the thief that stole to alleviate his hunger, men don't despise him. If he's caught, he's nevertheless going to be punished. He's not going to get off scot-free. As a matter of fact, he's going to be punished pretty severely, as we're going to see here. Verse 30, which we already looked at. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he's hungry, but if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. Now, a lot of people probably have the idea, and maybe it's just because of compassion, they feel bad for the guy, that if somebody's poor, they should be let off the hook. If you commit a crime when you're poor, then, you know, I mean, the guy's poor, what are you going to do, right? We probably shouldn't kick somebody when they're down, right? You should just take it easy on him because he's poor. But, you know, the Bible does not teach that. Leviticus 19 and verse 15. Leviticus 19 and verse 15 tells us that we're not to show favoritism to rich or poor. Leviticus 19:15 says, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor. So it doesn't matter if the guy is a homeless bum that, you know, walked into some store and shoplifted something to feed himself when he's hungry, or if he's Mark Zuckerberg and it's some kind of a white-collar crime. It doesn't matter. If the law has been broken and it's been a legitimate law, then the person ought to be punished for it regardless of his status. So this man here that stole to satisfy his soul when he was hungry, he's going to restore sevenfold. In other words, seven times what he stole. That's a pretty lofty punishment there if you really think about it. If you stole a car, right? I mean, this is not, in context, not what the guy is stealing, but if you stole a car, you're going to repay seven cars, right? That'd take you a while to pay off.
So, Pastor Wagner, what happened to those people who robbed, broke in stores, got TVs, and so on?
Oh, they were absolved, of course, because they were peaceful protesters. Oh. No, because they were doing a righteous cause. So, whenever you're protesting a guy that died of a drug overdose that happened to have a police officer kneeling on him at the same time, it's okay to burn down stores and loot people's stuff that had nothing to do with it. So, yeah.
Or when your team loses.
Right.
You can...
I know, it's outrageous. Outrageous. Now, the law of Moses required thieves to make restitution. And this is good law here. Some of these laws back there in the Old Testament, the ones that had to do with the civil code, these would be great laws to build a society off of. We should have restitution in this country. When you steal something, rather than going to jail and being a burden on society, you should make restitution. You should have to work for the guy you stole from, or you should have to go and work somewhere else and pay him back and more back than what you stole. This idea of going to jail, not only is it a burden on society, it just ruins this guy's life too. Yeah, he screwed up and stole. He needs to pay that back. But throw him in jail for a year and he can't work. He can't provide for his family. His kids don't have a father, right? It doesn't make any sense. There weren't jails in the Bible. You know that. Like under God's law and the law of Moses, there were not jails. You either got fined, you got beaten, or you got executed. That was it. No jails. You read about them keeping a man in ward for a day whenever he was found picking up sticks on the Sabbath just to find out what the Lord's judgment was going to be on the guy. The people weren't rotting in jails in Israel. Beaten, fined, or executed. And I am a firm believer in that. Empty the jails out.
These kind of laws, you don't need a jail because there's not as many criminals.
Right, exactly. Yes, that's exactly right. And I'll bet you, and I know this is the case, when Kent Hovind went to jail, he was a creation scientist. He went to jail here, it was 15 years ago probably. He was in jail for, I think, over 10. He just got out here a few years ago. But he talked to people in jail, and he said, if you had the choice, if they just beat the tar out of you or else keep you in prison for years, which would you take? And they're, I'd take the beating any day, right? Because they don't, you know, you're just wasting your life rotting away in prison and it's just ruining your life and a bunch of other people's lives. So anyway, that's not really what I'm talking about, but I do like to make that point whenever I have opportunity. But anyway, so in the law of Moses, there was this law of restitution. I talked about this in the study that Austin asked about years ago on lawsuits, whether it's right for a Christian to sue or not. And essentially, this is what suing is about, making restitution, making it right. So if somebody steals from you or somebody injures you or somebody does harm to your property, you have the right to take them to court, to sue, to get back what they took and to get back even extra if it caused other damage in the process. Exodus chapter 22 and verse 1. It says, if a man steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. Oxen were more valuable than sheep, obviously. Oxen you can plow with. You can also eat. They're bigger. There's just a lot more. They're a lot more value than sheep are, so the penalty was a bit higher. You had to restore 5-fold for oxen and 4-fold for sheep. Now, if the possession was still alive, then you only had to restore double. So if you stole the oxen or the sheep and then you killed them or sold them and where you couldn't return them, then that was worse. So you're going to pay either 5 times or 4 times. But if you stole the oxen or the sheep and you still had them and you could give them back, now you're only going to have to give back double. Verse 4, Exodus 22:4 says, if the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or ass or sheep, he shall restore double. Now you might think, okay, but why 7-fold? It says, if the thief be found, he shall restore 7-fold. And that wasn't really a law in the law of Moses. You don't have a law of restitution for 7-fold. But remember what the Proverbs are. The Proverbs are short, pithy sayings that are generally recognized as true. So what Solomon is saying here is apparently probably the custom was, if you steal to satisfy your soul when you're hungry, like you broke into somebody's house, you're going to restore 7-fold. And it kind of makes sense that you'd have greater restitution if you broke into somebody's house to steal food. Because more than likely, if you're stealing food, you're not going to be plucking apples off the tree out in the yard. In fact, in Israel, you were allowed to do that. If you were walking through the field, you were allowed to pluck ears of corn. You were allowed to take a fruit off of somebody's tree. You couldn't walk up there with, you know, 3 bushels and just start plucking them all. But if you were hungry just walking through and you grabbed something, it was no problem. That was allowed in the law of Moses. Jesus and his disciples did that. They walked through the field and they plucked off ears and they were eating them because they were hungry. They did it on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees had an issue with that, but the issue was not them plucking the ears of corn in somebody else's field. It was doing it on the Sabbath, and there was nothing wrong with doing it on the Sabbath either. The Pharisees were straining at a gnat, making a mountain out of a molehill. But anyway, the point is, if you stole oxen or sheep, you probably did it in the field, or at best maybe in the barnyard, or maybe even in the barn or something. And yeah, that's irritating, and that's wrong, and you're going to pay for that. But if you steal food to satisfy your soul, chances are it's in somebody's house. And you actually had to break into somebody's house, risking maybe they're there, maybe they try to defend themselves, maybe you end up killing them because they tried to kill you because you broke into their house. Who knows what? I mean, it's a lot more grievous offense to break into somebody's house.
Damage to the house.
And that makes sense why then you would restore sevenfold as opposed to only four or fivefold if you stole something out of the field. That's what makes sense to me, anyway. And it is interesting, there was a precedent in the law of Moses for punishing people sevenfold for their sins. The Lord said that he would do that to Israel. When they sinned, he would chastise them seven times for it. Leviticus 26 and verse 18. He says this several times, but I'll just get this one verse. And if ye will not let, or if ye will not yet, for all this, hearken unto me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins. So the Lord was giving them sevenfold there for their sins, and that was also the punishment that Solomon said would happen. And then it says, he shall restore sevenfold, he shall give all the substance of his house. And you think, well, wait a minute, how does that square? What if he broke into somebody's house and he stole three loaves of bread, and now he has to give all of his possessions in his house, all the substance of his house? That's more than sevenfold, right? He could have a bunch of wealth. Well, depending on the nature and circumstances of his theft, a thief might have had to give everything he owned to make restitution for his crime. It could have been, maybe if it was a more grievous offense and he did property damage, or he scared somebody really badly when he broke into their house, or harmed somebody was in there, or whatever, you could see him giving all the substance of his house. Or it could simply be that if you're hungry enough to steal to satisfy your soul, chances are you don't have anything in your house, right? You have a chair to sit on if you're lucky or something, right? You probably have nothing in your house, so it would take all the substance of your house to make up sevenfold for the food that you stole, and that's probably a more likely explanation. So it doesn't pay to steal even when you're poor, because you're going to be poorer if you get caught, if you lived under a biblical law anyway. So that takes care of verse 31, and next time we will pick up with Proverbs 6:32.